Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn, and early education expert Shay Everett. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Shay?
Hey, happy Monday. Manny's away on vacation, Shay.
Happy Monday.
So it's so good to have you here, though, right? Shay and I travel all over the state. Working on children's issues, and Shay is one of the foremost experts on early education in our state. And how's the whole state of early education going, by the way?
You know, it's on the up and up. It's improving. The state's making some great investments. We have more progress and momentum than I've heard that we've had in decades in talking with other people. So I think it's a good direction.
It's interesting, though, right? I mean, we've talked about this on the program before, that if we were to make an investment in children to make sure that they're successful, the biggest bang for that buck, right, early education, Shay, which is why you focus on this, right?
Exactly.
Such a big deal. Also, early education-wise, when we see a lot of these kids at the border, right, we've talked a lot about these kids at the border over the last couple of weeks. What are you seeing with some of the youngest kids? What is this trauma? What does that subject them to on the border?
So we know that trauma can greatly influence how a child's brain develops, and it can actually start, it can change their genetic structure. So then they pass on certain traits to their future children. So this can have a very long-term effect. But in the near term, it can really impact those social skills that they're developing, like being able to cope with problems and stress when they're older, and being able to attach and get and develop close relationships even throughout adulthood. So these things happening to babies and toddlers when they're separated from their parent, it can be crippling for the rest of their life.
I want to get into some of these shelters and see what's going on. I mean, there's so much talk, and I would like to separate the truth, you know, from the fiction and see what the reality is. And I know that you and I both spent a lot of time at the border, and we have visited a lot of different places down there. But there's some of these shelters that I've yet to be in, certainly in the last year or so. So it'd be interesting to get in some of those places, report back.
It has changed.
Yeah, I know. It's just amazing what's going on. So we have a good show, though, Shay. First off, it's going to be a good show because you're here with us. So that's good. On the show today, our data head. Our data head today is David McClendon. Dr. David is going to be talking about the number 35.
What could it mean?
What could is that? That's like way too old for you, Shay, right? So Shay is a youngster. So.
And after Datahead, we'll be talking to Angelica Adams from Communities in Schools about how powerful a summer internship program can be for students and help them succeed later in life.
When you were in high school, did you have a summer internship or just like a plain old summer job, Shay?
I had plain old summer jobs, but I actually was a volunteer news reporter here at KPFT.
Is that right?
Like 15 years ago.
Well, that was a transformative little experience for you, right?
It was actually very helpful in helping me figure out what to do with my future.
Wow. Very good. And I'm interested in the whole summer internship thing, right? I did summer jobs, right? I worked as a bag boy in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And so, but I think the whole idea of an internship is fantastic. We're going to be talking also today with Daisy Morales. Daisy is the Vice President of Community Affairs with Community Health Choice. Community Health Choice is the HMO, basically, for a lot of the low-income population in town. And she's going to give us some tips on keeping your kids safe and healthy over the summer. So got to keep those kids safe and healthy, Shay.
Definitely. And they do a lot of great community work, too.
Absolutely. Great work. We love them.
We do. And we're also going to have our social conscience scale, one of the highlights of the show every week, our thumbs up, thumbs down segment on should we abolish ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. So if you want to call in for that, the number is 713-526-KPFT. When we get to that segment.
Yeah, that'll be in about a half an hour from now. Our final guest today will be the Texas State Director of Save the Children. John Bracken will be with us, and he's going to be talking about the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. How are we doing in terms of recovery? How are our children doing? Save the Children has been a great partner with Children at Risk and part of our big collaborative of 45 organizations working for children on behalf of children in here in our state and in our city after the hurricane. So we'll be be fun to talk to John. He's always fun to talk to anyway.
Absolutely. It'll be a great show.
Should be a good show. Welcome to Growing Up in America. Shay Everett's with me today and talking about our children, public policy, politics, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? And should be fun, right? So usually, Shay, you're like the poetry in motion on the weren't you poetry in motion last week?
Yes, I was. Right. I don't even know what that really means.
Poetry in motion.
What does that mean, though?
You don't know what that means? David, what does poetry in motion mean? What does that mean, David McClendon?
I have very little idea. My guess is that it has to do with song lyrics that are like poetry that are in motion.
Oh, poetry in motion is like someone who's like moving very smooth. It's like poetry. It sort of goes together. It really works, you know, so that's poetry in motion. So David McClendon is poetry in motion. He's the assistant director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. Dr. Dave, what is the number today?
The number is 35, and I'll give you a slightly better hint, which is 35%.
35%. 35% of children.
Children. Adults,
35%
students.
Of children. What is it, David?
The whole thing?
So yeah.
35%
yeah.
of teenagers were employed over the summer last year, according to a new analysis of Bureau of Labor Statistics data by the Pew Research Center.
So that seems low to me, that only 35% of teens are employed. Am I wrong in thinking that's low, or is that pretty high?
Historically, it's quite low. So if we go all the way back to 1948, it's about 56% of teenagers.
Wow.
Those are 16 to 19-year-olds were employed. But even as recently as 2000, about half, so 51% were employed. So it's gone down a lot.
It's pretty low. Is it because we have low-income kids and there are just no positions for them, or is it a combination of that and then a lot of more affluent kids are just deciding not to take positions?
Right. So there's been a big shift, you know, with the 2001 recession and the Great Recession. There's a big shift in the labor market. There's just fewer middle-income jobs.
Hmm.
So there's more low-income, low-skilled jobs that teenagers used to take that now a lot of people, non-teenagers, you know, a lot of adults are having to take, especially during recession. But then there's also the things you're saying. So the school year in a lot of places ends later in June and starts before Labor Day. So there's less time to work. They're also, you know, more enrolled in high school and college courses over the summer. There's a lot of unpaid community service work that people are doing to, you know, burnish their college applications. And then the thing you guys were talking about at the beginning of the show, a lot more students doing unpaid internships, which don't count as being employed according to the...
Right. It's good experience, but it doesn't... It's a little bit different, right?
It is.
Right. So what does that mean for us? And this may be a bigger question, which there's no data for, but it seems to me that... historically, when you have kids who work, and I know Shay and I both worked in high school during the summer, and we developed that work ethic. David, you probably worked. And
I did.
You get a certain work ethic, right? Is that, hey, I know how to work for a job, even if I'm a janitor, even if I'm a bag boy. You know, it gives you a little something. What does it mean for our kids when they're not getting that? That's a bigger question.
That kind of experience, I mean, this is in my opinion, is important, but it can only go so far in the sort of new knowledge economy that we're in. And a lot of parents and kids are deciding that there's other kinds of experiences that will benefit more in the long run for them. So they get an internship and get an experience of the kind of what it's like to be in a job that they might want to be in. Five or 10 years.
And I can definitely see the benefit of that, even especially if you pick an industry where you'll work and you build connections and maybe you impress people and you're able to leverage that later. But I do see in a lot of, you know, just as we've interviewed people over the years to work at Children at Risk, one of my favorite questions you asked, Bob, is did you have a job during high school?
Mm-hmm.
And it's anecdotal, but it really has a correlation between whether people worked in high school and whether they have that kind of like grit and do what it takes and get the job done kind of mentality and like show up and work today rather than maybe they had an internship and those tend to not come with very arduous, responsibilities, right? Whereas you could get fired or you could really screw something up if you do something wrong at a job where you're getting paid.
I think I'm worried about, low income kids, right? Who, in a sense, need to make money for their school clothes or want to have a little extra spending money. And when there are fewer opportunities for those kids because there are adults working, in the fast food industry and they don't have a place to go, it's opportunity that they would take if they had it. And I remember I had to look hard for a summer job, right? It was very difficult to find summer jobs and you had to work to get there. But once you got it, it was like a big deal. So,
Do you think there's a difference between a summer job, like you're talking about as a janitor or at a fast food restaurant versus like, a lifeguard or a summer camp counselor?
Wow. David, what do you think on that?
I don't know. There's a lot of responsibility with a lifeguard, but it's more.
It's a job, though, right? It pays,
and you got to be somewhere on time.
Who's a boss in charge, and the kind of atmosphere, and the if you're not there, it matters more. So,
and if you're working with other adults too, or working with all kids, I bet that.
Right.
Yeah. I would have loved to have been a lifeguard or worked at a summer camp, right?
Me too.
I didn't even know what a summer camp was when I was that age, I have to say. So, David McClendon is with the Center for Social Measurement Evaluation at Children at Risk. David, thanks for being our data head today. Thank you for what you do, and thanks for being on Growing Up in America.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. What was your favorite, what was your first summer job, Shay?
Working at Double Dave's Pizza.
Double Dave.
In Katy.
Did you eat a lot of pizza while you were doing that as well?
Pizza rolls. So they made like these rolls, little like dough, and you rolled up the cheese and the pepperoni in there. And so, yeah, those are like your free snack.
Wow. Wow. That sounds very fun. So. Do you know the song? What is the song?
Sure.
What, do you know it?
I don't know who sings it. Oh, The Killers. Yeah,
we talked about
this. I love The Killers.
The Killers. That's who it is. On the line with us is Angelica Adams. She's the Director of Strategic Partnerships for Communities and Schools. Angelica, how are you doing today?
I am doing fabulously today.
That's fabulous. I love fabulous, right? So, Angelica, we're talking about summer jobs and summer internships. And at Communities and Schools, you guys work a lot on this idea of getting kids summer employment, right?
Yes, we do.
And what is the import in regards to kids and summer employment or summer internships?
Well, what's important for us is that, our mission is to help kids stay in school and achieve in life. And so this is the component where we help our young people achieve in life. We're giving them skills and a transformative experience, and so they can transfer that anywhere. And so we have four internships that do that. One in particular is the nursing externship that is with Methodist Hospital and St. Luke's. The externship at St. Luke's is an industry certificate where they can take it, whether a PCA, which is a patient care attendant, or assistant who assists, the nurse.
Yeah.
Houston Methodist, it's a little bit more intense, rigorous program whereby they are state certified. And that state certification allows those who are patient care assistants to use that certificate in the greater state of Texas and to be able to support the nurses in the hospital setting.
So are these internships, Angelica, or are these like paid jobs that these kids get?
They are paid internships.
Yeah.
And so they get paid $11.80 an hour.
Wow. Pretty good. And are these good sort of all these internships, these and other ones that you have, is the idea to really build up sort of the job experience, to give these kids sort of a glimpse at some type of job that they might not usually think about?
Absolutely. We have one with a legal internship as our with our partnership with the Houston Bar Association.
Yeah.
And many of our young people may not know what it takes to run. It's beyond being an attorney.
Yeah.
There is, you know, the accounting department and conference and hospitality. And so, you know, clerical, paralegal work. So it really takes an array of professions to really make a law firm function and function well. So our young people gain that insight by participating in the legal internship program. Again, yeah. That's also paid.
Angelica, are all of your internships, are they 40 hours a week or are they just part-time? What kind of experience do you give students in that regard?
For the most part, they're 40 hours a week. With regard to our nursing externship, there may be a look because there's some coursework that they have to go to. So they connect with a Smithwood Medical Institute where they go and take the courses in the evening. So it makes it a longer day. But for the most part, they work 40 hours a week.
And what's the difference do you see in these kids when they do an internship, Angelica, between before they had an internship and afterwards? How do these change these kids?
Again, it's a transformative experience. The students come in with maybe a zero level. Some of our kids have volunteered, so they never have worked. This is the first time that they've been exposed to a professional environment.
Yeah.
For some, our young people, they are putting on a suit or a tie. They are, and so they have not had maybe that experience at home of seeing someone in that professional arena. And when I say it breaks the cycle of poverty, it does. It gives our young people choices. And the money that they are, you know, acquiring during their internship, it pays. It might pay for college. It may pay for books. It may pay for prom. Most importantly, it puts food on the table for some of our students.
So do you focus on low-income families when you are offering these internships?
Yes, we do. We focus on young people who participated in our CIS programs. And so some of our students are at risk. And, of course, you know that at risk is a variety of reasons why our students are at risk. Some of them have been valedictorians.
Mm.
Some of them have been homeless. We have an internship with Judwin Leasing Management Properties. And it gives our young people a skill set that, you know, some of the kids who may not ever be interested in nursing or the legal profession, but they, you know, I can do this. And it gives them an opportunity to explore the option of a career in leasing management and having a permanent place to live.
And where can parents go to learn, and I guess students, learn more about this online for next year?
So we are communities and schools. Students who are participating in our program are connected through our CIS presence on the high school campuses. So certainly they can check out our website and look at where we will be at the high schools and community college levels, or they can also stop at their campus and see if there's a communities and schools site there and be able to move forward.
And Angelica, are there more jobs than there are kids, or are there more kids than there are jobs?
Well, you know, it seems like there are more kids than jobs.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can honestly tell you that the mayor's Hire Houston Youth Initiative has done a fabulous job. We have two of their interns with us, and those young people are, you know, truly engaged. So, you know, if we had positions that we had more young people, we referred them to that program so that they can have that experience as well.
And do they get paid in the mayor's internship program as well?
Yes, they are.
Oh, wow, that's
fantastic.
$8 to $10.
So. Yeah. It's above minimum wage, and they're exposed to the nonprofit arena as well as some of the commercial and other jobs like McDonald's with hiring. And so it gives our young people an opportunity to be skilled, because that's what we really want. We look at that, and it boosts our Houston economy. We really, you know, look at the fact that our young people are just being exposed, and it's a critical need. It tells us that our young people definitely need post-secondary training and the desire and the need for that in the labor market as well.
Are there still positions, if I'm a youngster and I'm hearing this, are there still positions available? Is everything full for the summer at this point, Angelica?
You know, I think at this point, many of the vendors or the employers have already selected their students. And so at some point, I think we probably have to cut off. But I would strongly encourage our young people to go to the workforce solutions locally, because there are positions still available for them, and there are programs out there, like, for instance, SurJobs, Work for Progress, has initiatives and programs beyond the summer.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities to really involve our disengaged youth to give them the skills that they need.
And I think what we're seeing in economy, right, there are more jobs than there have been in the past. It seems like it's a better year. I mean, you still have to work for them, but there are jobs out there. So Angelica Adams is with Communities and Schools. She's one of our good buddies. She's also a partnership in that Hurricane Harvey collaborative that we have going on. She's the director of strategic partnerships for Communities and Schools. Angelica, thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for being on Growing Up in America today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
She gave us some great resources.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear about all those kids, too. So good stuff is going on. Get that summer job.
Yeah.
We believe in it, Shay, that's for sure.
We do.
Are you ready to move on?
Sure.
Daisy Morales.
This is a cool song.
I don't know this one either. I need to get with it. Daisy Morales is on the line with us. She's the Vice President of Community Affairs at Community Health Choice. Daisy, how you doing? You there, Daisy? Did we lose Daisy?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Oh, there she is. She was like hiding from us, right?
Well, thanks for joining us, Daisy.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so Shay and I were excited to have you on, Daisy. So we wanted to talk, you know, the summer is upon us, and I know that you guys work a lot with families in the summer. What are some of the big dangers for kids in the summer, Daisy, that you guys are seeing at Community Health Choice?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, Community Health Choice, who we are.
Yeah.
We're a nonprofit insurance carrier, and we cover children and pregnant women that are Medicaid and CHIP. We also, you know, provide medical insurance under the Affordable Care Act. And we have over 475,000 members in Harris County and the 19 counties that surrounding Harris.
Yeah.
Now, out of those, the important point here of the education that I want to share with them, your listeners is, out of the 475 members we have, 104,000 of these children are under the age of 5.
Wow.
And yes, and during the summer, we like to remind our parents that drowning accidents are the leading cause of death and injury of children under 5 years of age.
You know, we were talking about this whole idea of drowning. I think two shows ago, we had a roundtable of pediatricians, and they were talking about this idea of kids drowning, and you know, all across sort of the South, you know, from LA to Miami and all these cities, we see significant numbers of drownings. From your perspective, Daisy, what's the proactive stance that we can take in terms of how do we decrease the number of drownings?
Well, decreasing the number is to the security around a swimming pool.
Yeah.
I mean, the majority of the drownings, accidental drownings, I mean, 80% of them are occurring in your backyard or an apartment swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, lakes and, you know, the beach or anything like that. So it's all around security around the swimming pools. But even with that, there's some children that are just very clever and will do things, you know, to still be able to get in, and, you know, they're in danger. And a lot of people think that these children are usually, you know, maybe being, you know, not supervised, but studies show that 88% of the children who drown are under some kind of supervision at the time.
Right. People just are distracted and they're not paying attention. Are sometimes these kids, I mean, kids tend to be overconfident. Is that part of the problem in the pools? They're overconfident?
Well, that, and plus also too, there might be a toy or something in the pool, you know, one of those floating, you know, toy, and they're trying to reach that toy a lot of times. So they're, one of the things is to put that away and not have anything like that, you know, in the pool, because the children will try to get to it.
Wow.
It's so sad, right? I mean,
because
you can only do so much, like Daisy's saying, where it's, you know, you may have an alarm on your pool, but then is it too late once they trigger the alarm? Or you may have a gate or a net that the kids can get around. So it's just, it's really hard. I mean, I guess maybe the most foolproof thing is to be vigilant and just watch them. But
yeah, what are the things that you guys talk about at Community Health Choice in regards to this, Daisy?
Well, we want to make sure that parents are aware of and how many accidental drownings there are in Texas. And, like, so far we've had 49.
Mm.
And, I mean, and the summer's not over, so we'll hear about some more. And that, you know, even if there's not a fatality, you know, there's a lot of problems, you know, with care in being needed for complications, you know, if somebody is, you know, has a near drowning. So, and some of them, you know, suffer severe permanent, you know, neurological disabilities. And we want parents to be aware of that. And that drowning is a quiet thing. People, you know, think it's like in the movies where, you know, they're thrashing
and yelling,
Yeah, and coming up and down, you know, bobbing. It's not. I mean, it's very quiet. And also, it's very quick. Like, they say that a child can drown in the time it takes to answer a phone.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, so, Daisy, do you have any resources for parents where they can go online if they have a pool or just see how they can secure their area?
Well, No, I don't, but I want to talk about this great program the YMCA is doing. And they have a program called WaterWise Program, and they have been very aggressively trying to eliminate drowning.
Mm.
And they do it through water safety education and awareness, and also through, you know, teaching swimming skills. So this summer, Community Health Choice has collaborated with YMCA in providing these water safety free programs to areas where we have a majority of our concentration of our population in apartments. And this is, you know, in apartments in areas that normally they wouldn't have the opportunity to participate in a swimming program. And it's not about teaching them necessarily how to swim, but how to get out of the pool if they do fall in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the whole WaterWise program is about. And, you know, they bring the lessons to the children by bringing lifeguards and certified swimming instructors to visit the apartment, and also they go to school districts also. And, you know, these are life-saving, you know, tips that, you know, kids can learn and parents can be there and support them.
I'm so glad you mentioned YMCA, too, because they do so many great water safety programs, from parents who have babies and doing the Water Babies program, getting kids to be comfortable with water and safe in water. The Y does a lot of these programs to get kids their swimming lessons and so forth. But also, you know, District 1, County Commission District 1, used to be L. Franco Lee, now it's Rodney Ellis. They do a lot of swimming classes as well. They've gone into a lot of neighborhoods to teach kids how to swim. And these things have an impact, a positive impact on our kids when we're really teaching them how to manage in water, right? I mean, the more that kids know how to swim, the better they'll be. But it doesn't mean that parents can stop paying attention, right? I mean, this is the crux, is that parents need to pay attention when kids are in the pool,
mm-hmm.
Daisy.
Yes. I mean, it's 100%, you know, of the time, almost like being a lifeguard. And that's why you don't have a lot of, you know, drownings in community pools when there's a lifeguard.
Right.
Because they're very vigilant and you know, taking care to, you know, watch everybody, and they can't afford to, you know, take their eyes off the water when there's, you know, kids in there, especially under five, because that is the majority. I mean, we have so many of these kids, and we're aware that this does happen.
Yeah.
And and also the YMCA, I mean, they want to make sure that they teach the children not to be afraid of water. You know, that water can be fun,
mm-hmm.
but they have to be safe around it and, you know, and respect it.
Hey, Daisy, in our last minute, I know Zika is a big thing, and I know you guys have done some work around Zika. What is it that we need to do in terms of protection from Zika, and is it still as big a deal as it was last summer and the summer before?
Well, yeah, it is still a big deal because there's still a lot of mosquitoes here in our Bayou City.
Yeah.
But what I want for people to know is if they have Medicaid or CHIP, they are covered for one can of mosquito repellent once a month. So if they go to the pharmacy and they pick up a can of mosquito repellent and take it, you know, to the pharmacist and show them their member ID card for Medicaid and CHIP or CHIP, and they are covered for that can of mosquito repellent because it's pretty expensive. I mean, and there are a lot of mosquitoes out there, and you know, it's still a problem. It's just we don't talk a lot about it, but it's still, you know, it doesn't go away, and this benefit that, you know, it goes through the end of the year. It gets renewed, you know, by HHSC on a seasonal basis. But our season goes all the way through the end of December with mosquitoes.
So if you have, like, a family of four and everyone's on Medicaid or CHIP, Like, it's per person. Because you can go through mosquito repellent real fast in a city like this.
It is based on the member ID, so everybody has a different member ID, correct.
Okay.
Very good. Daisy Morales is the Vice President of Community Affairs at one of our favorite partners, Community Health Choice. Daisy, thank you so much for all the work that you guys do at Community Health Choice that you do, and thank you so much for being on Growing Up in America today.
My pleasure.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Daisy.
So you're listening to Growing Up in America, KPFT, Pacifica Radio. And you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down?
I think so.
Boom. So thumbs up, thumbs down. We're talking about ice today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So should we get rid of ice? What do you think, huh?
I mean, so I'm curious about where this came from. You know, what is it? Is it?
This is people all over the country are all over the country now are saying, let's abolish ICE. You know, the woman who just the young woman who won in New York for Congress.
This
is one of her platforms. Abolish ICE. The senator from New York, Kristen Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Abolish ICE.
Are they replacing it with anything?
Well, I think the whole idea is that ICE has become something that people didn't want it to be, right? Sort of these thugs, it seems like, right? In terms of what they're doing with all these women and children and families.
Well, I think,
and that's where we're going. So if you have a say on abolishing ICE, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Thumbs up, thumbs down to abolishing ICE. What do you say? Oh, Shay, you're acting all like you don't like this idea.
I'm thinking about it, but I mean, whether it's the Environmental Protection Agency or the Education Agency or Health and Human Services, I tend to think a little bit more regulation the better, that protects people and helps, you know, protect whatever programs there are. So, I mean, when it comes to agencies,
but what do you think? I'm sort of following this idea. I think that we've come a little, the ICE has gone a little too far. Now, indeed, it's been under the direction of our president, right? It's been the direction of the Justice Department, and where they've become these, the bad guys, right? When did the United States become the bad guys? And I guess it happened, you know, in the election a year and a half ago. But the idea of families being separated, families kept in custody, kids being put into detention facility in cages. It seems like it's all the wrong message. And so maybe this idea, let's abolish ICE and create a new agency that's more gentle, that's more reflective of our society. I think that's where people are going with this, is that we just don't like what ICE has become.
Sure, I can totally see that. It just seems like maybe a little bit too radical of an approach. I mean, ICE does so much more, whether it's with human smuggling or cybersecurity. I mean, they do a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm. They do.
So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about this, and probably leaning no.
No, I think you're leaning thumbs down on this one.
Yeah.
I think I'm leaning thumbs up. I love this whole idea of holding them accountable in a different way. 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Abolish ICE. Let's go to our buddy Johnny is on the line. Johnny, how you doing today, man?
Yeah. Kind of hot and bothered.
Yes, yes.
Not by mosquitoes, though.
So what do you think, Johnny?
Well, what do you think I'm going to say? If Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is thumbs down, so am I. We, these United States, have a plethora of law enforcement agencies. They are redundant, they are a drain on taxpayer dollars, and they are rogue in so many ways. Raping their charges, threatening them for money, taking people's property like cops often do under the RICO statute. No, we need a massive overhaul of our law enforcement, the way we hire, the way we vet them, the requirements, their pay needs to go up, and we need to demand better of them so we can actually get some decent people, maybe start drafting liberals to serve as police in exchange for college tuition.
All good ideas, Johnny. We have a couple other.
Yeah, Johnny's a big thumbs up. He's with me. Hey, thanks, Johnny, very much.
Okay.
Take care, man. And let's go to Bill. Bill, you're on the line. Thumbs up to abolishing ICE or thumbs down? Let's keep it. What are you thinking, Bill?
Thumbs up, man. We already have, like, people don't realize how many arresting agencies or authorities in the United States. There's like 26 or 27. You got ICE, you got the Treasury Department, you got tobacco and firearms. Please, and, the FBI and the local police should be able to handle this. I mean, or the federal authorities in some other manner than this.
And you know, Bill, I don't know if you've been down to the Valley lately, but when you go down there, there are like so many different law enforcement all over the place. You know, so this idea that we have an open border, you just have to go down to the Valley and see the law enforcement all over the place to understand not only don't we need ICE, but we have plenty of others there, right?
It's insane, man. You got the border, I mean, all that. I mean, they're way overemployed. I think, what is it, immigration, illegal immigration down to like a 40-year low or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. That's exactly what's going on. So, hey, thanks for your call, Bill.
Thanks for your time.
All righty. Let's go to Ann. Ann, you're on the line. What are you thinking on this one? Thumbs up, abolish ICE, or thumbs down and keep it?
Thumbs up, abolish it.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about why, Ann.
Because from what I've heard and read, there a lot of the ICE people are contract people. They're not military. They're not part of the government or the state. They're contracted to go out and find people wherever they are, and they're very invasive. They're going into homes and churches and everywhere to get people and send them back to whatever country they came from. We don't need that. We have Homeland Security. We have all kinds of people guarding the border. Seeking people out, who are many of them in the process of becoming citizens because it takes so long.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. It's amazing, right? Hey, Ann, thanks for calling in.
Lots of opinions.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you get where they're going too, Shay? I mean, and in some ways, I know that you agree with them in some ways, right?
I do. This... I mean, I don't think families should be separated. I think people should be given asylum. I think that we should have, you know, open immigration policies where people are welcomed into our country, especially when they're fleeing violence in their daily lives somewhere else. I mean, I can't even imagine living in a country like El Salvador where it's like warlike conditions in many neighborhoods, so...
And, you know, until a year and a half ago, we'd go down to the border, and what we would see what was happening is specifically when we're looking at kids and families, mm-hmm. is that they'd come across the border, and they'd seek out a border agent, right? They'd seek out the law enforcement to turn themselves in for asylum. And to turn it around and to make them sort of not want to deal with these people because it's going to mean family separation, it's a big deal. Let's take one more phone call. And let's talk to our good buddy, Tag. Tag, you're on the line. How you doing, man?
Good, Bob. How about you guys?
Fantastic, fantastic. So what are you thinking on this one? Thumbs up to abolishing ICE or thumbs down, keep it around?
Would you think I'd vote thumbs down and just keep ICE?
No, I don't think so.
Let me say, I think that I should go, and not for the reason most people think. Okay?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The reason that we need to get rid of ICE is because... how it's being used, and it's being used to line the feather the nests of the rich again.
Yeah.
A story that's come out recently is our old friend Betsy DeVos. Remember her?
Oh, I remember her. Yep.
And did you hear about her little hustle? I don't know if she's the president or she owns this thing or whatever. But up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, there's a thing called Bethany Services, and seems that some of those children of the 10,000 that are here in these homes are at Bethany Services in Grand Rapids, Michigan, under the guise of, or under Betsy DeVos somehow.
Yeah.
So what I've been told, I don't know if it's true or not, we'd probably have to Google it or whatever, but I hear that Bethany Services is getting paid $700 a night to house these children. So,
wow.
I mean, it's just like... Hello, you know, ICE is just being used as a tool to make somebody money here. And the other thing I want to say about that, and I don't have anything to substantiate this either, but I'm sure it's well known that there are places where a lot of undocumented workers are still currently employed and they aren't worried about getting busted. And it's because it's just like the old, what was the mob used to do? They used to offer... Right, well, you paid them out money, and then they never come and get you, or you'd be safe.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, I gotta believe that there are a lot of illegals here yet, and they know where they're at, and they're just not taking these corporations down, because these people are cooperating with whoever.
It's easy labor. No, I think you're right, Tag. I mean, if we really wanted to reduce the migrant labor, we'd be stricter in terms of employment, right? Which is what we're not doing right now. So
that's right. So if you look at those two sides of the coin, which is basically the same side of the coin, I think that, you know, if we actually took a good look at why we should take out ICE, then it would lead us to some of these other things and understand why we have this immigration policy going right now to help the wealthy few out there.
Yeah. Hey, Tag, thanks.
More money. Thanks. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, man. Take care. And we'll take one. Scott is here waiting patiently. Scott, you're on the line. How you doing, man?
Fine. Yeah, thank you. Well, I think it is premature for candidates to be proposing it in this campaign. The Republicans are all too eager to make an issue of it. I've already read about how they're bringing up.
President Trump brought it up yesterday.
Bring it up as a way to attack Democrats. There is a district in New York City where it evidently sells, and this woman won the primary.
She did.
If she does it, but then the Democrats in other parts of the country will feel forced to disown it.
It's not an easy issue to campaign on. I mean,
is a pattern that has happened many times. Oh, for example, in 1990, what's her name? Jane Fonda made a donation to Ann Richards, and Ann Richards returned the donation because the Republicans were making an issue of it.
Yeah.
Republicans are always doing that. Trying to force Democrats into backing down and disowning radical positions.
So, Scott, you're with me, thumbs down. I think this is too premature, too. I mean, come on.
Yes.
It's a good idea for reform, but completely abolish
it. And I do think Republicans want limited government except when they want all-powerful government.
Exactly. Hey, Scott.
And they find immigration, they like having immigration as an issue. But you can be sure there are plenty of Republican employers who like the status quo because it gives them cheap labor.
Absolutely. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling in, man. We're going to have to go on to our next guest. Yeah. Thanks so much for calling in.
And it is not really my issue. It's kind of an encumbrance, and I doubt that it's a solution.
Thanks, man. Oh, man, we love Scott, right? Plus, he sided with you.
He did.
So that's a good
thing. I wasn't
thing.
Completely ganged up on by our listening audience. Thanks.
Very good. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio, and we want to talk a little bit about the whole Hurricane Harvey and its aftermath and how things are going for kids. A little bit of a theme music here. What is this? Do you know this?
I don't know.
Do you know this, Shannon? What is this song? And I know how to lock Dierks Bentley. There you go. This may be his John's favorite song. On the line with us is John Bracken. John is the Texas State Director for Save the Children and part of the Collaborative for Recovery for Children after Hurricane Harvey. John, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great, Rob. It's good to chat with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Shay and I were excited to have you on the program with us.
And I love working with you around Texas Rising Star and quality childcare. So I'm glad you get to join us to talk about all the work you do.
Mm-hmm.
You bet, absolutely.
So tell us, John, you guys, Save the Children was on the ground right away, right? I mean, you guys came in right after the hurricane, and you're used to working in these disasters. How did the disaster in Houston after Harvey compare to some of the other disasters around the world that you guys have dealt with?
Well, it certainly was one of the major initiatives or disasters we responded to, Dr. Bob. I mean, we were on the ground, as you're suggesting, and setting up child-friendly spaces in some of the big shelters here in Houston, and making sure we're the group that focuses on children's needs during a disaster. And have been doing that around the world for years. And so we responded to here in Houston, and this last year has been such a challenge for us as an organization because not only did we respond here in Houston, but we responded in Florida and in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. So it really stretched our stretches pretty thin. But we, you know, we're a group of folks that are going to rise up just as you guys are to help children. And so we set up child-friendly spaces. You can imagine being at a shelter and with your, you know, nothing but the clothes on your back, and you're a parent, you got kids, and we set up places in the shelter where you can take your kids as a respite, maybe get a little bit of sleep, and just kind of be able to manage some of what's happening to you. And then also handing out all kinds of essential baby items and diapers and bottles and high chairs and all those kind of things. And we have relationships with funders that were just so generous to us. So,
you know, when I think about Save the Children, the first time I ever ran in person with Save the Children, I always heard a lot. But I was down on the border, I'm going to say 4 years ago, when the first time we had this surge of families and children coming across our border. And Save the Children was right there working with Catholic Charities, but creating these friendly spaces for children, and so parents could take a break from the stress that they'd been under, and kids could play or read, but basically have this very nice space. And it was amazing to see this happening, and then to now see it right in our home in Houston. It's sort of amazing that, you know, kids need that space, don't they? And it's absolutely part of their own recovery, and it starts immediately.
Right. Yes. You know, the soonest we can try to help families get back to some sense of normalcy, you know, just the better off we are. So, yes, we've done that around the world. We did it during the immigrant children crisis in 2014, and we'll do it again if we need to be there. So that's a big part of what we did. And that introduced us this time around to Texas. So, yeah.
So John, what's the status of all the children? Maybe it is child care providers or public schools, but what's the status of kids now that we're, 8 months after Harvey?
Yeah, so after, you know, after the last shelter closed in October, our work moved to our child care recovery work, and that is around helping child care centers and after school programs get back on their feet. And that involved giving out sub-grants and dollars to these child care centers, after school programs, all the way from rebuilding their facilities to providing additional materials to help, you know, to help them, things that were destroyed during the hurricane, because many of these folks are mom and pop shops. If they're for profit, they're not eligible for FEMA dollars, and most of them are for profit. And so, I mean, if they don't have kids in their child care centers and after school programs, they're going to go out of business. So, and there, you know, when you look at economic development and the workforce and everything, if parents can't take their kids to childcare or get them into after school programs, they can't get back to work. And so that space is where we started our work late 2017 and certainly ramping up in 2018. And at this point, we're coming up on we're a little bit under 500 childcare centers and after school programs that we've assisted, and we're working all the way from the Golden Triangle, Beaumont, Port Arthur, through Greater Houston and down to the Coastal Bend. You know, people forget that's where the hurricane hit, Rockport, Aransas.
Oh, it's horrible down there too.
Oh, it is. It's like it's still like a kind of like a war zone. And so, and so we're working in that space to help child care centers. And not only do we want to get them back to where they were, but we actually want to make them better. And that's, again, you mentioned our commitment to Texas Rising Star. We want to, if we're going to bring dollars to the table, we want to make sure that we're helping them with curriculums and helping them become involved with Texas Rising Star and helping that whole initiative. And we're working here in Houston, of course, with Collaborative for Children, who is just a premier organization in that space. So.
And what kind of work have y'all done around trauma-informed care and trauma training?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So we have a evidence-based program, trauma-informed program called Journey of Hope, and it's been used around the world during disasters. And it basically is implemented mostly with school-age children. And we typically do it in a school setting, an after-school program setting. It's an 8-week curriculum to help children deal with the trauma they've experienced, helping them identify their feelings, help them manage some of the stress that's come upon them. And we're implementing that again through the whole coastal region, through school systems, through after school programs, communities and schools. The other thing that we're doing is we call it care for the caregiver. And so you know, when you start talking to teachers and those that responded and are still dealing with these kids, they're not in their homes either. I mean, I've talked to many of teachers and school, after-school providers that are still not in their homes, and yet they're carrying the weight of these children. And, boy, you give them an opportunity to talk about it, and, boy, the feelings gush out. They've been holding that. They've been being strong. And so that program is geared toward that group of folk, and we're offering that, again, through the hurricane region.
Hey, John, a couple weeks ago before school ended, I went to one of these prep rallies that you guys have, the Save the Children has. Yep. And this idea of getting ready and prepping, you know, as the new hurricane season approaches us or is here, how do these prep rallies sort of help the resilience of kids, you know, after they've been through a hurricane and get ready for the possibility of another one?
Yeah, that's a great it's a great program, and I didn't see you doing the prep rally dance at that.
I don't think I was dancing for some reason. Maybe my foot was hurt.
So. Yeah, maybe that's what it was. So I was kind of a trooper. I was out there trying to. So how do you gauge kids? You do it through activities and through play and those kind of things. So the kids learn how to be prepared for the next hurricane, all the way from their go kits, what they got to have in their go kits, water and some of the, you know, some of the basics that even us adults don't pay much attention to. It's not gonna hit me. I don't have to worry about it. And so you do it with the children. And what we hope happens is they go home to the parents and say, "Mommy, I learned this today in school, and we gotta have our flashlights and our go kits." And you teach them some preparedness activities. And it's through a lot of fun and interaction. We do that in the school systems and the after school programs and those kind of things. So yeah, it's, you know, how do you reach the parents? Many times you do it through the kids, and so that was a great, and we appreciated being able to do that with you guys at the elementary school. I mean, working with these kids and getting, I was at a program this morning and sitting down with the little ones, and you know, that keeps me rooted. You know, it keeps me understanding why I'm doing the work that I'm doing and the fabulous things that are happening with Save the Children and our work with you guys at Children at Risk. And I'm in a good space right now.
That's good.
Final question before we get to our final four at 54, John, with you is, you know, we heard, and you and I have talked about this, that how long is it going to take for those kids that went through the devastation of the storm? Maybe that was down in Port Aransas and Rockport, but those that were flooded here in Houston and were outside of their home for some time, to those in the Golden Triangle and Beaumont who didn't have power for extended amounts of time. A lot of those kids, right, had significant trauma. How long is it going to take before those kids bounce back? And they may seem normal now, but how long before they're really sort of operating at full capacity?
Well, you know, Bob, it's hard to say. I think it's going to be a lot longer. I think there's a delayed response with children. So let's see the next hurricane that forms in the Gulf. Let's see the, you know, Beaumont had some pretty significant rain here not too long ago.
I know.
And what we find with kids is that brings, we hear them talk about, are we going to get flooded again, Mommy? Are we going to be out of our homes again, Mommy? And so those kind of things trigger the trauma all over again for these kids. And as you know, many of the children we're working with are experiencing trauma in other ways. I mean, some are living in poverty, some are, you know, living with abuse and neglect and some of those kind of things. So this is one more event as part of their lives. And so, Bob, I know this is a time that I can beat the drum a little bit. We have got to pay attention to the mental health needs of our children here in Texas.
Absolutely.
And Save the Children is committed to that, you know, having our space with our psychosocial programming. And I'll be banging on doors with the rest of them to say, guys, we need to, whether it's these disasters or heaven forbid what happened with Santa Fe.
Yeah.
You know, our children are experiencing these trauma events, and we as adults have to make sure that they're taken care of.
Yeah, you know, the governor came out and talked about the need for mental health after Santa Fe, but the fact of the matter is that the violence-ending mental health programs are, you know, we need a lot more mental health. We can't be 49th in the nation in mental health as we are today.
No.
We need to do a lot more for our kids. So.
Right.
Very good.
I agree. Absolutely.
So you ready for a little Final 454 with John Bracken, Shay?
Yeah, it's my favorite part.
Yeah, I'm going to have you answer the questions today as well, Shay.
Oh, so, good. Okay.
Yeah, so you ready for a couple questions, John?
Sure, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
All right. What was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
My favorite toy, I had a Tonka truck. One of the big yellow ones that you could sit on. You could do all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
Tonka truck. Those are big. I love those Tonka trucks. Those How about you, Shay? What was your favorite toy?
You know, I had a lot of Barbies, and I really liked them.
Really? You're like a Barbie type.
A Barbie. Yeah.
But I like to play in the dirt, too, so the outdoors is nice.
Very good. Okay.
And what did you want to be when you were growing up, John?
Holy mackerel, that's a tough question. So, I think I wanted originally to be, my dad was in management, business management. So I was, you know, I remember drawing pictures of him coming off the train. We lived in New York at the time. And so I thought, well, I want to go work in New York City. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but that's
work
what I
in New York City. What do you want to be? Yeah, that's good, right?
That is.
Who doesn't want to work in New York City at some point in their life, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
How about you, Shay? What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Well, I went through this phase where I wanted to be the president of the United States.
Oh, still time.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm saying I'm voting right now. Right.
Shay Everett, President Everett.
Announced it here first.
Got a nice ring to it.
And what was your favorite book to read as a child?
My favorite book. I liked Curious George.
Oh.
Because he was always in mischief. I could relate to that.
The man. What was his guy? He was with the man with the yellow hat?
Oh, yeah, the man with the yellow hat. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. What was your favorite book, Shay?
Mine was anything by Roald Dahl.
Oh, yes. Very nice. Ooh, so, like, that's James and the Giant Peach.
Yeah, and witches. And
witches, yeah. Very good.
Uh-huh.
And then our final question today, what was your favorite TV show as a kid, John?
You know, I liked Lost in Space.
Oh.
Now, I was kind of scared. I would hide behind a chair and make my sister tell me what was going on when the monsters came out. But I still liked it.
Dr. Smith would drive me crazy.
I'm telling you, right?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Lost in Space?
No.
They did a reboot on Netflix. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it's good. I've watched all of them. So.
Nice.
What was your favorite TV show, Shay?
So I watched a lot of Nick at Night, and so Brady Bunch was up there.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I know. I had sophisticated tastes as a youngster.
Okay. John Bracken is the Texas State Director of Save the Children. John, thank you for all that you do, and thanks for being on Growing Up in America today.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
So, Shay, thanks so much. What a great co-host. Every time you co-host, it's fantastic. So, you know, I love having you in that seat. We always miss Mandy, though, right?
We do.
Mandy is always such a positive presence. I want to thank Shannon McKerchie, who's a great producer. I want to thank Don, who's a great engineer. We miss Marissa, right? Marissa is off working for the health department. She's doing a great job, though. But we still miss her. And listen, make sure that you take care of all the kids in our community. Hug your kids and take care of one another. And we do this for children, so we hope that you do it as well. Hey, we will see you next time here on Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio.